Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Veils of Fire on Spreaker.com. I'm Carrie Reynolds, and I'm one of your hosts for the show tonight. We have a good show lined up, and it's the premiere of this show. We're going to be doing a general overview of the basic history, alien capabilities, and commonly reported types of aliens. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the host of Blog Talk Radio's The Alien Agenda, and I'm also a lifelong abductee and paranormal researcher, investigator, and ufologist. With me tonight is the other host of the show. His name is Tom Montauk, and he is the web owner of Montauk.net. And if you're tuned into the show tonight, you can go to his website, to the chat room, to join in on the discussion and ask any questions that you might have. So thanks for joining us, and I'll go ahead and bring Tom on here. Tom, go ahead and let everybody know a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Carrie, and hello, everyone. I'm Tom. I'm an author, a researcher, and an investigator into pretty much anything fringe, occultism, alchemy, scalar and quantum physics, alien agendas, which we're going to be talking about tonight, and the Matrix control system. I'm also an abductee. And, you know, I've studied physics and electrical engineering in college, so I try to use my science background to approach these non-scientific subjects in a more rigorous manner.
Okay. Well, I think that most people think that aliens come from just, like, outer space, and once in a while they show up, but you, on the other hand, feel a little bit differently about that, and you feel that they're closer than we think.
Yeah, that's definitely true. The way I started out with all of this is, you know, my childhood had a very supernatural atmosphere to it. I had several ghost encounters when I was a kid in Germany. I had several alien encounters. But the one thing that I learned in later years of my life is that these kind of encounters that you remember obviously and consciously, they're only the tip of the iceberg. You know, it's not like aliens abduct you one time, you know, every couple of years, and then the rest of your life you're totally left alone. That's not actually how it works.
How I thought it was.
No, not at all. The things that we can see consciously and see with our five senses, like I said, it's the tip of the iceberg, but there's a lot going on behind the scenes during our day-to-day lives that we need to be aware of, okay?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And this is one of the reasons why I contacted you to do this project was that basic little piece of information right there was so eye-opening for me to even grasp the concept that these small bits of memories we have of these aliens is but a very small part of what's actually going on. So I just wanted to do a quick shout-out here to Allison Cruz and thank her for sending me over a link to your website because I've learned a lot about your website, and without her sending me that link, I would have this show wouldn't even be happening right now. So I'm very glad that I found your website. Your website is very valuable with information, and it's really good education material, so I just wanted to add that there. So
yeah. Thanks. Yeah, my website's been online since 1998, so I'm going on almost 14 years here being on the web with this kind of material. You know, and my research has definitely improved over the years as I've talked to more and more abductees and contactees and other researchers, you know, adding more pieces of the puzzle, trying to get the bigger picture. So, you know, it wasn't until about maybe 6 years ago that things kind of came full circle, and I started realizing that the alien agenda is a lot bigger than I had previously imagined.
Well, what happened that kind of, you know, not to get into like, you know, I don't want to open a different discussion, but what kind of helped you come full circle in realizing that, you know, the threat was more serious than previously thought?
Well, back in 2002, after I left college, I moved down to Florida, and living there for a couple of years, my life took on quite a supernatural color to it, because I had a lot more weird experiences than I've ever had before. I mean, for example, in 2002, I was up one night writing an article at 4:45 in the morning, when I heard some rustling outside in the courtyard outside my apartment. And so I put out my mental feelers trying to figure out what it could be. And as soon as my mind latched onto it, that's when the hair on my arms, you know, really started to stand up. So as I listened to it, it started coming closer and closer to the door until eventually it shoved itself up against my door and rattled it And, you know, at the time I was thinking, this isn't supposed to happen. Normally I'm only supposed to be able to see aliens in a sort of like a trance state coming out of sleep or something, you know, being totally paralyzed. But this was happening while I was totally 100% wide awake. You know, I was, you know, I don't usually go to bed until like 6 in the morning anyway, so it's not like I was tired or hallucinating. But that was just one of the more freaky things. But aside from that, I also started realizing that there were a lot of tiny manipulations happening during the day. Not to sound schizophrenic, because this isn't schizophrenia at all, but you can have foreign thoughts suggested into your mind telepathically.
Absolutely.
From beings that are around. And the reason why you know you're not crazy is because you might have, let's say, a pet, you know, a dog or a cat, who reacts to an invisible presence moving around the room that you yourself can feel if you're even partly intuitive, you know? So I had that kind of confirmation that something was lurking around more often than not, and that therefore whatever intelligences I was dealing with, they were in my life like 7 days a week, you know, not just once every couple of months during an abduction or something like that.
Absolutely. A couple instances in my life, I don't know if this has ever happened with you, but I've at certain times noticed overwhelming odors of sulfur, and one was when I was on the computer and the room just became full of this sulfur smell. And I honestly thought there was like a gas leak in the house. I ran downstairs just to check everything, and there was no other odor in any other part of the house. And the odor was so overwhelming, I had to open the windows to air the room out. So I don't know, you know, I've heard others speak of this. I don't know if this has happened to you at all, but that's one of the indicators for me, is I will notice like odors of sulfur whenever these beings are around.
Oh yeah, I've definitely heard of cases of that. What I've had is I've had more of mysterious noises, mysterious beeping sounds that I can't identify, you know, actually in the room and echoing off the walls. I've had that. I know some abductees and one contactee who also mentioned the sulfur smell as being a byproduct of them, quote, phasing into our reality. It does that. Also, you know, in the field of paranormal investigations, you know, ghosts and departed loved ones, they can also leave odors behind when they come around,
right?
Like, you know, be it flowers, you know, if they're
cigarette smells. Yep. I've heard of that too. And this sort of smell, the sulfur smell, is so scary, because you know that it's number one, it sparks your fear of, oh my God, is there a gas leak in the house? And then once you realize there's not, you're like, okay. And it was very scary to me. I never had like beeping sounds, but I've had knocking sounds happen throughout my life. It's always been knocking sounds whenever they show up. And that's happened a couple of times. So I guess it's different for everybody. I guess they sort of, I don't know, like get an intuitive feel on, you know, what you would pick up on as being, I guess, unusual to get your attention.
Right. Yeah, and aside from smells and knocking sounds, you can also have crackling sounds like static electricity or cellophane being crackled.
Oh, okay.
That's another one.
Yeah, I've heard of people saying that they've seen what looked like a small black shadow or something black roll across the floor. That was unusual. I never heard of that one before, but that was more into the MyLabs, I think. I'm not sure, but yeah, so tonight we're going to be talking about just the basic overview of these aliens. Did you want to talk about the basic like alien information?
Yeah.
And or like, for example, we know that they're cloaked or dimensionally shifted. Like right now, like, okay, in real time right now, is it possible that these aliens are stationed right over our cities, in our own towns, and around us right now?
Yes. And in fact, if you have clairvoyant sight, you know, they call it second sight or etheric vision, you can see these. And that's only happened to me a couple of times, because my clairvoyance isn't something that's always on. I go into it sporadically in a partial sort of manner. But I do know people who have it. There's one in town here. I'm in Central Virginia, by the way. There's one in town here who, he passed away a couple years ago, but he told me personally that he was able to see alien ships parked over hospitals, over, you know, stadium events, and that some of these seem to be almost harvesting some of the energy being given off by these areas, you know, be it the sports excitement or, you know, some of the pain and suffering and life force energy being given off in hospitals and so on. And not to say that all aliens are doing this kind of thing, but I take his word for it because he was a pretty trustworthy person, and he proved to me personally that he's quite clairvoyant. So
that's good that he was able to see that because yeah, I remember talking to a I think he had like 30 years experience. He's a known abductee investigator, and he said that most abductees will not even know in their whole life that they've been being abducted. And that just kind of really just, I had this just sick feeling come over me like, wow. I mean, so there's only a small percentage of us that realize what's really happening.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because one of the things aliens like to do is put on a stage, like a, what do you want to call it? Like a fake image that you have, a fake perception that you have about them and their role in your life. You know, and those are the kinds of things that they allow you to consciously remember. I mean, for instance, I won't name specific names, but there's one example of an abductee who got taken going down a road, and she had this really, in her mind, quite an amazing experience, you know, an encounter with spiritual aliens and so on. But, you know, when she came back, she noticed she was sore in strange places and had bruises and scars, and none of that she remembered. She only remembered the part that was all love and light, you see. So there was a lot going on that she wasn't allowed to remember.
Exactly. That's what's really sad about it is I've had that happen to me where I've had two incidents in my life where I've had that feeling of, oh, my best friends in the whole world just left, and, you know, just this feeling of euphoria. And then I'm thinking, if they were really my friends, why are they showing up in the middle of the night, lurking around in my house in the dark, you know, and then not letting me remember everything that happens? And that's just something I keep in mind. Like you said, they're not all bad, but you have to really take it with a grain of salt. So, yeah. For the big aliens, what types are you aware of that are known to us right now?
Well, I mean, the most commonly reported ones, of course, are the Greys. And then besides that, you also have reptilian-type beings. The others are called insectoids or mantids. And the final category, which are also relatively popular, are the Nordics, you know, and they look like us. So, yeah, I'll get into these in detail during the show, definitely.
Sure. What did you want to talk specifically about right now?
Well, let me first of all emphasize why I think aliens are closer than we think, okay? Because back in the 50s, UFOs were primarily lights in the sky. You know, they're mysterious things. And, you know, yeah, you had that on the one hand. And on the flip side, you also had people having contacts with, you know, what they thought were Venusians or Martians or something like that. You know, people that look like us and they look like blonde gods. And nowadays, we know them as the Nordics. But nowadays, we also have the Greys, Reptilians, Mantids, and several other types who seem to be the top dogs nowadays, whereas back in the 50s, you had a much broader spectrum of different alien types. So, you know, over the decades, it's kind of narrowed down in terms of what alien species are interacting with humans the most, at least in America, and possibly in Europe too, because certain countries in South America, Central America, and so on, they still have a pretty interesting, colorful variety of different alien species. But here in the USA, for the most part, it seems to be the aforementioned four types, you know, Greys, Reptilians, Mantids, and Nordics. And I think that's possibly due to what agreements our military, or, you know, our intelligence agencies have made with some of these species. Maybe some are given access to our airspace, whereas others who didn't make a treaty with, you know, our shadow government, I guess you could call it, they've been denied entry here. So therefore, in America, you primarily get, you know, most of these four, whereas in some countries that never made those kind of treaties, you'd still get some of the others.
Right. That's another thing that the one investigator spoke of was that he claimed that he could tell who was telling the truth with their abduction stories and who wasn't, because he felt that there were certain aliens that abducted from certain countries, and that it seems like, for example, you'll hear like the Greys abduct a lot from the U.S., and then you'll hear the Reptilians abduct a lot from like Central South America or, you know, Asian countries. Do you believe that could be true, or that's just maybe a coincidence or something?
You know, yeah, I do think that's plausible, but I don't really have too much information on that.
Okay. So they're walking among us right now, cloaked either in another dimension, because there's, you know, this is a conflicting thing for me, is whether they're actually in our dimension or they're coming here on ships,
right?
You know, You know what I'm saying? So it's, I don't know either way yet. I haven't seen evidence one way or another yet, so.
Well, let's get into some basic alien info here.
Okay.
Yeah, now this is based on my research that I've done since I was 12. You know, when I was 12, I got a library card and I read every book that I could find on UFOs and metaphysics and occultism back then. So, you know, it's been a two-decade journey for me trying to get to this point. And, you know, what I found is there's no doubt about it, you know, whether you read the works of Zechariah Sitchin or William Bramley, that aliens have been here since before the dawn of recorded human history. And no doubt about that. So when people call aliens visitors, you know, that's not necessarily true because they've been here possibly even longer than we have. Mm-hmm. But if anyone's visiting this planet, it's us.
Exactly.
You know, and once upon a time, back during Egyptian times, Sumerian times, even before that, they were taken for the most part as gods. And who wouldn't, right? I mean, back then, people weren't familiar with advanced technology, and here come these beings showing up, revealing themselves with all these awesome magical abilities and technology. But then the question is, what happened that nowadays they aren't like that anymore? And what happened was that it seems like around 1000 BC, the alien presence, for the most part, became covert. You know, before that, they're flying around openly, they're interacting with the population openly. I think some of them were even setting themselves up in temples to be worshipped, you know, in a Stargate kind of a manner. But something happened right around 1000 BC where they went covert. And at least in religion, that's supposedly around the time when God ceased talking to man. But of course, it wasn't God. It was these non-human beings who seemed to stop talking. You know, so after that, most of the encounters that humans have had with them became sporadic. Kind of like what we have nowadays, you know, people encountering on the road. Occasionally, you know, you get visited by one, but it really wasn't an open presence. Not until about the 20th century when they began popping back into our reality more and more. And I think it's part of an acclimation campaign, like a kind of like viral marketing. You know, they're trying to advertise themselves more and more. And, you know, you got to wonder what that's for. So that's one of the things I'll be talking about because it really ties into what they're here to do.
Yeah, I had not really thought about that too much, about, you know, what caused them to leave or to go into hiding when, you know, we look on cave walls, you know, all over the world and carvings in stone, and there's the images of, you know, the what we would call the grays or men in full astronaut gear. So that's another mystery to it all, is, you know, what happened.
Yeah, well, you have to wonder about it because, you know, were the Greys here back then, or if they are, let's say, beyond time or have time travel capabilities, did they simply go back there, you see? You know, it's hard to tell. We can't really tell, being within linear time, whether they're time travelers or whether they've been around since forever, you know, since the beginning. But there's no doubt about it. A lot of these cave drawings, figurines of reptilians, reptilian gods, David Icke has pictures of that. He gets into that quite a bit. But the interesting thing is that these ancient gods, you know, regardless of Greys or reptilian, the one that shows up the most, of course, is human-looking. And that's very interesting because you'd think that if they were reptilian or whatever, that they would be depicted as such. And they're only depicted as such in rare instances, you know, under certain tribal cultures back then. But most of the gods back then were human, which leads me to believe that the Nordics, above all the other alien factions, are actually some of the prime players in what's going on our planet.
Yeah, were they also, these gods back then, they were also like taller? Were they the taller ones, or were they, because I know they were saying that one temple near, you know, the Mayas in Mexico or whatever, that they said he was taller.
Yeah, well, there's a question about whether those beings, I mean, we're talking about Quetzalcoatl and other gods who came to the ancient Mesoamericans. Whether they were necessarily Nordic aliens or whether they were an advanced Nordic-like civilization that had already been on Earth for let's say, thousands of years. And maybe their ancestors were who are nowadays the Nordic aliens. That's one of the things that I've still been researching, exactly what the connection is between this really advanced Caucasian-type race back then and you know, and the Nordics nowadays. So there definitely does seem to be a connection. But there's no doubt about it, you know, whether it's Central America, China, Egypt, and a lot of these ancient civilizations, their gods were typically depicted as taller, muscular, fair-haired, fair-skinned, you know, light-eyed gods. And, yeah. and the closest thing that we have to them nowadays would, of course, be these Nordic aliens. And so, you know, that's another reason why I think they've had a very, very strong-handed role in our history.
Yeah, definitely. So they all have their own agendas then, each of these alien species, they all have a different agenda for us?
Yeah, it depends. Like, you know, there's different alien roles, you know. I mean, you can generally divide them up into neutral observers, ones that are here simply to study what's going on. And unfortunately, this is what the, at least several decades ago, that's what the majority of the UFO community thought aliens were. You know, they thought they were just scientific observers here from another planet, you know, and this is called the extraterrestrial hypothesis, you know, the idea that these are physical beings coming here in physical ships from other planets to study us. But research since then has proven out otherwise, and that these observers are actually quite in the minority. In fact, the other two roles that aliens typically take are those attempting to influence what's going to happen here in the coming decades in their favor, and, you know, those, I guess you can call them the bad guys, you know, just to be colloquial about it. And the others, you know, you can call them the good guys, and they're pretty much here to help us get through this time period spiritually intact. You know, it's like this rite of passage. They're trying to help us get through it so we can come out on the other side on our own two feet and not be subservient or dependent on any other alien race who might try to take advantage of us. So, you know, yeah. you have these three types, the observers, the negative types, and the positive types. And that's how I tend to view them, you know, personally, when I do my research, you know, neutrals, positive and negative, because, you know, it helps me zero in on what their agenda could be exactly.
Sometimes, you know, I don't know if it's just me or if it seems this way, but having had experiences with what I believe to be positive and negative entities, it's like sometimes it just keeps me questioning, you know, well, which ones are the good guys, which ones are the bad guys? And then it's kind of hard to say either way because, you know, for me, I only remember them either coming to get me or bringing me back. I don't really remember anything else other than that. So that's, I guess, what kind of worries me is, okay, well, who are these, you know, beings and, you know, what is their motive in my life? And so knowing their agendas, you know, like you say on your website, being educated about this is really what's going to empower us and save us from it all. So knowing like the aliens' different capabilities, different agendas and things like that. Now, are all of the aliens telepathic, and can all of them go in and out of dimensions, or?
You know, well, yeah, I mean, there seems to be a spectrum of different types. You know, I mean, the real question is, like, who are aliens, right? I mean, people wonder, how do you define alien? And I myself, I define it as a non-human being with superior intelligence, superior technology, and superior psychic abilities. So things like a ghost, you know, that's not an alien because it doesn't use technology. And it's not always necessarily superior in intelligence. You know, neither are angels, because angels, they don't use technology, nor do demons, and so on. And that's one of the distinctions that we have to make between alien beings and these other supernatural beings. You know, that they're not necessarily alien intelligence. They're just a different type of being within the entire multidimensional spectrum of our reality. And I myself, I don't believe that demons and aliens are the same thing. That seems to be more what certain religious fundamentalists believe. But if you have had experience with both demons, angelic beings, ghosts, and aliens, you can tell that they're all a different category, even though in some cases the lines between them tend to blur. But there definitely is a distinction between them. Now, what capabilities these aliens have, how advanced they are, you know, it partially depends on where they come from. Okay, some of them could be time travelers. It could be our own descendants coming back in time, attempting to change their own past. You know, that's one possibility. They could be from a parallel timeline or some sort of a different universe that's dimensionally shifted away from ours, okay? Some of them could be from, it's termed fourth density in certain esoteric literature. But what it is, it's a quasi-physical, etherically enhanced realm. It's like something that's not fully physical, but not fully etheric. It's kind of in between. And beings that come from this part of our reality, they can project themselves into our universe, in and out. You know, it's kind of like a variable. It's like tuning in and out of a radio station. That's the kind of ability that they have. And some of them, you know, honestly, some of them really could be pure extraterrestrials, just like physical beings like us coming here from other star systems. But It's a lot more difficult for such beings to show up on Earth versus what I would call hyperdimensional beings. One of the simple reasons is that if you actually get in a ship and if you try to travel from here to another star system, you have to contend with a lot of cosmic radiation and debris. And as long as you're 100% physical, it's very difficult to go through that without getting burned up or taken out by all the bombardment. But if you're quasi-physical, then you can easily shift yourself into a more ethereal state and easily go through right through that, you know, in the same way that during an abduction, they can lift you out through a window or you know, walk through solid walls. So it really depends on where a certain alien type comes from as far as like their abilities go. Now, what I've had to do is I had to divide up the spectrum of these aliens into a sort of a continuum between the pure terrestrial types, you know, which I would consider human-like beings who live on Earth, but hidden amongst us, and they don't reveal that they themselves are more advanced than we are. You know, this is the idea that a researcher named Mac Tunney's talked about. He called them the crypto-terrestrials. And actually, John Keel talks about them, too. You have this idea, you know, that we have a parallel humanoid civilization living on Earth with us. You know, some of them, you know, they could be underground. Because if you think about it, I mean, we live on the surface, right? And we've got 6 billion people on the surface of the Earth. Well, how many layers do you have under our feet where you can stuff billions more beings? You know, you can have billions more humanoid or otherwise beings underground living on this planet Earth. And I guess they would be called terrestrial because this planet is their home too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's an whole other subject of like, you know, the Dulce firefight and, Phil Schneider. Yeah. He claimed that he was actually had discovered while he was drilling out there the New Mexico desert or wherever that that was in fact the case, that they were living under the ground there. So
yeah, I've also read reports of not only Greys underground but also human like beings like ourselves. Actually, if you go back to Celtic legends, the Tuatha De Danann, who showed up in Ireland around 1500 BC, it was said that after they lost a kind of a battle with competing powers in the Irish area, that they were forced to go underground. And not only that, but they joined a civilization that already was underground. And that's just like one example in mythology where these beings went underground and really haven't been heard from since. So, you know, you got to wonder how many other civilizations are down there as well. And how many might wish to emerge in the coming years. I have reason to believe, based on my research, that there are some who are tired of living underground and they actually want to come out on the surface and live among us. So you got to wonder about that too.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely enough, I wouldn't say evidence, but enough experiences from other abductees who claim that they've seen such places under the ground that, you know, it can be taken into consideration for sure. I mean, Atlantis and, you know, the glass pyramids, I think they said, were underneath I think they found those near, I'm not sure if it was near the Bermuda Triangle or not, but they're on the seabed there.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, yeah. And not to mention all the underground tunnels in South America that have also been reported, and also in the Southwest and in the USA. There's a lot of ancient stuff underground that we don't have access to because we can't get that deep. And in fact, you know, anytime these entrances to these places are discovered, they tend to be taken over by governments and military and sealed off.
Definitely. That might actually tie into, we won't get into it, but just a quick mention of the strange booming sounds being heard all over the world and in the United States, where the U.S. Geological Survey is trying to say these are microquakes happening, and that's what people are hearing and feeling. But that's another subject for another time.
Right. Yeah. So let me continue on then with the alien spectrum. I talked about the terrestrials being underground, and then you've also, like I said, you've got the extraterrestrials which come here from other star systems. Now, beyond them, you also have what I would call ambiterrestrials. And these are the ones that I mentioned are not fully in our physical reality, but can project themselves here if they wish. They can also shift themselves out into a partly etheric state. Okay, so these beings, they're amphibious between our reality and some other reality, and they can shift back and forth. And they're the ones, I think, that comprise the largest portion of the alien presence here today, just based on the capabilities.
Yeah, absolutely, which would explain how they're able to get into everybody's houses and affect our timeline so well and get away with what they do. You'd have to be able to have that kind of superior, I don't know if I should say technology or gift or attribute or what.
Yeah. It's partly a psychic skill that they have that allows them to shift in and out, and also partly it's a type of technology that allows them to alter what's called the quantum phase. And the quantum phase, it's kind of like the frequency on a radio station. Okay, you know, you can shift it up or down, and you can tune into one station or another, and that's what they have control over, whether it's through psychic powers or through technology. You know, so the ones that are less skilled in the psychic area, they would have technology to augment this type of ability, whereas beings that I would call ultra-terrestrial, these are ones that are entirely non-physical. They're kind of like energy beings, you know, they're pure thought energy. And those are the ones that don't use any technology at all because they don't need to. So they can project themselves here on a dime if they want, and they can appear fully physical just because they are that powerful. Whereas, you know, the ambi-terrestrials, who are a step below them in evolution, they need to use technology in order to pull that kind of thing off. So, you know, so we have a whole spectrum from purely human-looking type beings here on Earth, native to Earth, to ones that are here from other star systems, to ones that are not native to our dimension but can come here if they want to using technology, to ones that are entirely from a different ethereal realm altogether but who can still project themselves here. And ultra-terrestrials, I would put angelic type beings and demonic beings in that category because they fit that category perfectly. You know, that they're not technological but they're not physical either, and they have to use thought energy to show up if they wish.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. So which ones of these beings or entities do you believe have kind of joined with the, you know, our human shadow government and infiltrated that to sway things in one direction or another or enslave us or anything like that?
Well, the question is, like, when did that all start? And from what I can tell, a good chunk of it started back before World War II, when in Germany, the occult predecessors to the Nazi movement, you know, the Thule Society and the Vril Society, they claimed that they were in contact with these beings that they called the Aldebarans. These were actual alien beings that were in contact with the female channelers of these groups. And these channelers were able to dictate technological plans and information to what eventually became the Nazis. So, you know, the Nazis, you have to wonder, like, where did they get their ideology? Part of it was based on Teutonic mythology, but part of it, I think, was also given to them, influenced by non-human beings.
Yeah, definitely. They had technology that, you know, I don't think that even the U.S. was working on anything like that. And if we were, I don't recall reading about it anywhere as far as, you know, they talked about the bell-shaped object that they can't account for, where did it go? And they were just talking about this on Ancient Aliens and how it, coincidentally, they were kind of speculating that the Kecksburg incident could have been that very bell that time from World War II and the Nazis were in there. And, well, we'll never know, you know, if that was really them or not. But, yeah, things like that bell and their technology. I mean, we knew that they had technology superior to what we had at that time. Their top scientists and everything, they were killed after they were done working on those projects so that they could never tell anybody else how to build such things.
Right, and the sheer speed at which the Nazi technological movement, the scientific movement, was able to achieve what they did, it was so fast that there's no way they could have done it on their own. So, you know, that for me is one of the indicators that they had help. In fact, actually, Wernher von Braun, I believe it was, said years later that, you know, that they had help from other non-human beings. That's the only reason why they're able to get where they did. You know, so here's the important part. After World War II, you know, the Germans supposedly were defeated, but the core of their scientific intelligentsia was actually transferred over to America, not only under Project Paperclip, but under, you know, several other projects that were never revealed. And they, in turn, ended up becoming the core of not only NASA, but the CIA and the whole entire Black Ops military industrial complex.
One of the top people in United States NASA right now is one of the former German Nazis. I can't think of his name offhand, but he works for NASA, and, you know, a lot of their scientists came over here and worked in our hospitals and, you know, did the experimenting on people and the eugenics and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it just filtered over to here, and just because we did it in a nice, legal way through our policies and procedures, then we're better than them. No, not true. We're no better than the Nazis when we do the same thing.
Right. So, yeah, so after the war, you know, they came over, and it was right around 1960, 1961, actually it was 1961 that President Eisenhower gave his farewell speech, in which he warned the public about the sheer threat, the sheer danger of what he called the military-industrial congressional complex. He was very, very worried about something taking over the government and taking over the entire country, and, you know, pretty much turning the entire world, you know, into a technocracy. So he was very worried about that, and you have to wonder why. And the reason was because he was part of the old establishment, you know, before the whole Nazi thing. He was still part of that, which was now being taken over by this cancer that had been brought over from Germany to America. And coincidentally, that very same year, 1961, is when we had the Betty and Barney Hill abduction, in which they claimed to have seen not only gray-like beings, or proto-gray-like beings, but also a human-type person who they described as a Nazi officer, looking like a Nazi officer. So you have to wonder about that, you know. I mean, in my opinion, the aliens that were associated with the whole entire Nazi movement got transferred over to America and then took things over. So that ever since the 1960s, this country has, for the most part, been under the jurisdiction of the Greys and any sort of other associated negative alien groups. You know, that's where my research has led me. And I think everything that's happening today in the world can be traced back to what regions of the world have made what deals with what types of aliens. And at least here in the USA, it's been unfortunate what groups have been taking over here.
So when do the good aliens come out and try to help us gain back our free will and stop this enslavement process that's been steadily growing, and, you know, with civil unrest and everything else that's going on, and nothing seems to be right in the world anymore?
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, it's not like they haven't tried. Back in the 40s and 50s, they were actually more open, walking around, contacting people and so on. But what happened was that around the time of Eisenhower and the Nazis being brought over and so on, certain treaties were made with certain alien groups, but not with others, okay? And what the story goes that the Nordics attempted to form a deal with the government, you know, saying, we will give you, I don't know, some sort of wisdom or guidance or something in exchange for you knocking off some of your more dangerous weaponry, like nuclear weapons and so on, which they thought were dangerous. Of course, the military wouldn't buy such a thing. You know, they probably viewed these Nordics as space hippies or something. And they didn't want to have anything to do with them. And instead, they made deals with Greys, possibly reptilians, and other related groups who would offer them technology in exchange for the government giving them free rein to abduct members of the population.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was ever since that time that things really, really took a dark turn. And, you know, I think maybe at first, maybe the shadow government believed that they had things under control, you know, that it was like a good deal, you know, like a good trade, you know, we'll let you abduct some of our citizens and you give us some technology, everything's good. But I believe that sometime around the early 70s, maybe mid 70s, they realized that they had been had and that it was too late, that there's nothing they could do about it. You know, they've been thoroughly infiltrated. And at that point, you know, what can they do other than either go along with it, believing that, you know, if you comply with your conquerors, you know, at least they'll spare you.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. I think at that point is when they became complicit with the alien agenda and actively attempted to propagate it, you know, not only for their own gain, but possibly for some twisted, you know, pseudo altruistic motive, you know, to save the entire human race. Because if they attempted to resist, maybe they believed that the aliens would implement a scorched earth policy and wipe out our entire planet. Actually, there was a movie, The Forgotten. It's an interesting movie because it tries to depict the alien presence in a more hyperdimensional sort of way, you know, how they control our reality and manipulate time and so on. But one of the NSA agents in the movie, he was captured and he was interrogated on why the NSA was allowing these aliens to do what they do. And what the guy says is, you know, we have no choice. The only thing we can do is at best damage control, try to minimize the damage because we can't control them. And I think that's actually pretty close to the truth. And then why you find government groups collaborating with with these obviously hostile beings.
Yeah, of course it would be military men to think that they could outsmart and overpower a higher species, a higher level of intelligence, and keep them under control. And that's just the human ego at its best right there. We can control the ones that are smarter than us. You know, it's not going to happen. I just wanted to ask a quick question because I had read this when I was going over some of the alleged documents about these treaties with the extraterrestrials. Is in the initial agreement with the military or shadow government with the aliens, they were instructed to keep records of all of the abductees that they took and what they did and so on. And then there was one person that said that the aliens stopped reporting to the military about who they were taking, and they were lying about who they were taking. They weren't telling everybody that they were abducting. They weren't holding a full account of everyone they were taking. So I was just wanting to ask you if you believe that the military or shadow government now, or these extraterrestrials, are keeping logs and documentation of families and people they abduct and the procedures they do and what they do and things like that.
Yeah, well, the military, the black ops, you know, shadow government, shadow military, it's actually very compartmentalized. You know, you've got some sections that are very close and in cahoots with the alien agenda, and you've got other parts much lower on the totem pole who are not. I mean, they believe that they're actually acting in the best interest of national security and other such illusions. So you have these lower echelons that believe that the aliens are really still doing their own thing, okay? And, you know, these lower echelons believe that the aliens should be providing them with lists and so on. But the truth of the matter is the core of the shadow government has been thoroughly infiltrated by the alien presence. And, you know, they're working actively with the aliens in pulling off the alien agenda, which I look forward to talking about more in detail in a future show, exactly what the agenda is and what the disinformation methods is that they employ.
So are we going to talk about the the other conspiracies, like JFK, 9/11, and how aliens were behind those as well?
Well, I don't think they had as much to do with that. Although, interestingly, I will give out one interesting tidbit, because the guy who told this to me, he passed away several years ago, so I can reveal it now. But JFK, actually, on the day that he was shot, he had in his shirt pocket a set of index cards on a speech that he was to give revealing the presence of aliens. And those index cards were taken from him and were kept in the possession by someone, and now they're in the hands of a certain author who I can't reveal. But these index cards do exist, and that was one of the reasons, possibly, why he was taken out. But my main point, I guess, would be that 9/11, JFK, these kinds of conspiracies, they're actually quite subordinate to the big thing, which is the alien agenda. I mean, our future is going to be more decided by the alien factor than by anything else, more than World War III, more than Fukushima, more than global warming. I mean, why more than Fukushima? Well, it's because even black ops nowadays, they have technology that can freeze nuclear decay, you know, so they could just beam the place and shut down nuclear reactions if they wanted to. Okay, so that's not as big of a problem unless they wanted it to be a problem for strategic reasons. But yeah, I mean, compared to the alien agenda, yeah, these conspiracies are actually minor, you know, so that's the reason why I like focusing on the alien thing, is because that's kind of like the big pyramid tip top of it all.
Yeah. So we discussed their capabilities and where they're possibly stationed at around us at all times. And did you want to talk about the activities of what exactly they do? I know one of the big things for me was, you know, reading on your website how they implement behavior modification and do a little bit of brainwashing, like while we sleep, and invade our thoughts and dissuade us from certain paths we might take that might, you know, benefit us exposing them.
Right, and that's actually one of the hidden underbellies of the alien presence. It's one of the things that they don't want to talk about in popular mainstream abduction literature, just because it's a little too close to us. You know, they want to keep alien phenomenon as something that's out there, you know, something at arm's length, off in the distance, the lights in the sky. You know, certain people get abducted, but you're not going to get abducted because you're not of interest to them. Well, you can join a forum. You can start talking about alien activities, and if you ruffle enough feathers, you will get visited, even if you've never had an abduction in your life. Okay, that's how in our face it is. Yeah. Now, as far as their capabilities go, like I mentioned, you know, they're telepathic to different degrees. They can insert foreign thoughts and feelings into our minds if we're not careful. And I mean, this is not everyone. It's just certain people that are of strategic interest to them. Okay, so hopefully not everyone is going to get scared by this. And by the way, you know, we shouldn't get scared. We should get aware. You know, don't get mad, get even. And you can get even with the right knowledge by giving it out and pulling the rug out underneath them. Because, you know, they depend on our ignorance and our illusions and fantasies and wishful thinking to keep doing what they're doing. So, you know, it's by doing this kind of research and publishing these kinds of articles, you know, doing shows like what we're doing right now that I hope we can make a dent in some of what they're trying to pull off.
Okay.
Yeah. So let me get into the types of activities that aliens seem to be doing nowadays. Okay. One of them, which, you know, most people know about based on literature, is the hybrid breeding program. You know, it's what gray abductions seem to be all about, even though that's not what they're all about. But the hybrid breeding program is definitely a part of it. And what it seems to be geared towards is creating a race of proxies or intermediaries, creating like an elite class that can then be integrated into the human population and act as intermediaries between humans and aliens, so that, you know, they can become our elite rulers, who they themselves then in turn obey, you know, the commands from their alien progenitors. Okay, so that's what the hybrid breeding program seems to be about, to create like a new race that's subservient to the alien civilization and has some sort of control over us. And then I believe that eventually in time, if these hybrids do take over, that humans as we know it will be phased out and be replaced by these hybridized human types. And, you know, that's not going to be good because, as I'll discuss shortly, what makes them hybrid is that they've been hybridized with grays. And what makes grays grays is that they're very robotic. They're easily telepathically manipulated by other aliens, you know, almost like remote control automatons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you take that and you mix that into the human genome, you're going to get a humanoid hybrid who's also, you know, more robotic and more easily telepathically controlled than humans are. And that's precisely why they would make an ideal elite class of people to rule over, you know, the rest of humanity. So it's a hybrid breeding program. That's one of them. Another thing that aliens engage in is the grooming of human mouthpieces for their agenda. And in here I'm talking about certain contactees, certain abductees, and even certain people who don't even know that they are abductees or contactees, but who have simply had their beliefs and their perceptions manipulated, massaged, since they were very young, to turn them into pro-alien agenda vectors of disinformation. And I'll be discussing that more in a future show, specifically on the alien disinformation campaign. Another thing they've been doing is they've been positioning certain, I guess you can call it vectors, certain agents of theirs in strategic positions within human society. You know, this could be politics, this could be military intelligence, even the fringe conspiracy field, also the entertainment field. We can't be sure exactly who's who, but there is some suggestion from what I've seen, that they actually have controlled humans within these strategic positions, you know, so that they can turn things around if they want to. You know, they can manipulate culture, they can manipulate decisions, and so on. And actually, that's one of the things that the lower echelons of the military are really worried about, it seems, you know, who might be amongst them trying to control things. So anytime you hear about Black Ops military looking out for abductees or trying to hunt down aliens, a lot of that has to do with them hunting down the human agents of alien groups that they themselves are enemies of. Okay.
Okay. I'm trying to follow you here so that I understand who's who and everything. So basically, we have the aliens with their own agenda, and then we have our Black Ops military or government with their own agenda, and it, you know.
Yeah, partly. And actually, let me add to that quick. Yeah, so the Black Ops military part that has their own agenda, that's only like the lowest part of the pyramid, you know, the part that's closest to the mainstream surface society. For instance, you know, if you've got a relative who joins the military and he ends up getting like a top secret clearance and he joins Black Ops or something like that, that whole entire thing there, that's the part that is the most removed from the alien presence as far as we can tell. But there's parts even deeper than that, parts of the military that have the real control. You know, and part of it's not even military, and a lot of it is non-governmental organizations like corporate stuff, secret societies, things like that, that actually have way more control than these surface-level military layers do. But the whole point being that at some point, you're going to have an area where the military stuff bleeds into the alien stuff, and it's entirely under alien control. And I think that's the biggest problem that we have, and I think that's what Eisenhower was warning about with the military-industrial complex and the whole like Nazi core that has taken over things since the 1960s.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't the human faction he was worried about. You think that he believed that our military itself was directly influenced by these negative aliens?
Yeah, precisely.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense. They did it, you know, in Germany. Why wouldn't they do it here?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, even Eisenhower and the group that he was part of, they were aware of the alien presence for quite some time. But I think things took a pretty nasty turn around the 1960s, where, you know, things just got out of hand. And he was attempting to warn about it, but it was kind of futile because, as we know, since that time, the whole gray abduction thing has really ballooned, you know, has really mushroomed and taken off. So now let me get back to the types of activities that they've been engaging in. Now, okay, so aside from putting their own agents within strategic positions, they also try to censor information as best as they can that might undermine their agenda, okay? So certain researchers putting out information that's a little too risque, a little too early, they take them out. One good example is Carla Turner, who back in the 90s was putting out some pretty revealing, eye-opening stuff about the reptilian agenda. And she came down with a very virulent form of breast cancer and passed away in the mid-90s. So she's one example. Phil Schneider, he's another example. He allegedly committed suicide, but I don't know, signs indicate that he was murdered, okay? So, right. But nowadays, I think there's enough information out there that people can talk about this without getting bumped off quite as quickly.
Yeah, definitely. And then aside from the bad guys, there's the good aliens out there who are doing the good kind of programming and, you know, helping us to, I guess, evolve and to counteract these attacks we are under by these negative entities.
Right. Here's the thing, okay? Ever since thousands of years ago, the alien presence has had to go relatively covert so that society in general does not acknowledge the existence of these gods that still exist and rule over us. But the problem is that even the good guys, the so-called good guys nowadays, have to remain covert. So how do they fight an agenda through us that they can't do openly? And the only way that they can do that is through contact and possibly even abduction. So, you know, you might have a person who's actually being abducted or contacted by different alien factions, using them as a kind of a rope, you know, playing in a game of tug of war.
Yeah. And then I read, I'm not sure where I read it at. I believe when I was going over a part of the alien section on your website where that there's a common misconception that a lot of people believe that the alien allies from Pleiades are helping us in a war against the reptilians, and that might not necessarily be true.
Yeah, and the reason why that isn't true is because even among the Nordics, there are different agendas and different orientations. You can't just say, oh, you know, all Nordics are good and all reptilians are bad. It's not that simple. In fact, well, I mean, you know, let me get started by talking about the Nordics. You know, it's a pretty fascinating subject to me because of all alien types, of course, they're the ones that look closest to us, and therefore they're the ones who can walk amongst us most openly. And they also seem to be the ones that are most related to us based on their appearance, and therefore the ones who are most invested in our future. Okay, so the Nordics, you know, they're fair-skinned, large eyes, above-average physique. The thing about them is, interestingly, unlike any other alien types, they can directly interbreed with us. Okay, so their genetics are compatible. You know, unlike greys who have to be artificially hybridized, you know, same with reptilians, and so on. Now, the Nordics, based on anthropological research, they seem to have had a presence on Earth for at least, I would say, 30,000 years, possibly in connection with the Cro-Magnons. So, you know, the people nowadays who are Caucasian, fair-skinned, they might have ancestry tracing back to the original appearance of these Nordic aliens on Earth, you know, 30,000 or even earlier than that, years ago. And ever since that time, it seems that they have interbred with certain humans throughout history, and that they have planted their hybrid offspring within our society to play certain roles. And typically in mythology and folklore, it's said that these hybrids are, you know, they're, what do you call them, changelings. They're half god, half human, okay? Like one example being Alexander the Great. It's said that one of his parents was actually a non-human godlike being, and the other was human, okay? Same with Hercules and so on. So a lot of these heroes of history are said to have been the hybrid offspring between humans and humanoid aliens, if you want to interpret it that way. So I find that pretty interesting because that might still be going on nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you know, again, a lot of people confuse Nordic with the red-haired beings that abduct people, but the Nordics have the light hair, not red hair, right?
Yeah, it's difficult distinguishing between some of them, but from what little I've been able to ascertain, you have some red-haired types who are actually quite aggressive, and they tend to be red-haired, a little more muscular, more aggressive, and some suggest that they actually come from the Orion constellation direction. You know, so see, you got to watch out for the different types, but you can't strictly determine their nature and their intention from appearance alone. Because let's say that the Nazis had time travel capabilities and that their future descendants came back, right? And so you got these blonde haired, blue eyed Nazis from the future coming here, and of course we can't look at them and say, "Oh my God, you know, they're so beautiful, they must be gods, and they got to be good." I mean, that's just you know, foolishness.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Nordics, you said, have the most invested in our future.
Right, because it seems that some of them, well, actually, I would say a majority of them are, they very well could be time travelers from our own future, coming back here in an attempt to change the past, or keep the past from changing. It seems that they are in competition with other alien factions who are also trying to influence our history in their direction, okay? So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that these Nordics have time travel abilities, that they come here from one of our probable futures, and that they are attempting to, how should I say, enhance or assist certain people among us to have the certain kind of knowledge that's needed to ensure that the future goes in the right direction.
Yeah.
So that's how these so-called good guys are attempting to counteract the negative alien agenda. So they're trying to build up certain assets, human assets within the population that during a time of chaos, during a time of uncertainty, let's say when aliens show up and the human race gets confused, you know, now that their entire history has to be turned on its head, that you have some of these people given proper knowledge and proper training to make sure that, you know, the rest of the population doesn't go crazy and follow the wrong alien factions down a really, really bad path. You know, and then that's what the Alien Disinformation Campaign is actually all about. It's about seeding really deceptive information among us so that when aliens show up, we make the deals with the wrong alien groups and pretty much sell our souls to the devil, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, when you were describing that just now, it kind of rang a bell with me with a previous interview I had did on one of my shows where we were talking about abductees that seem to believe that they are hand chosen to do a job, I guess, for the aliens during a certain time. Like they are being trained to assist other people and to possibly fly the spaceships. And that just, I don't know that why that came to mind when you were describing that.
Well, yeah, it's a huge part of what's going on, actually. You know, you have different alien factions, each of them abducting and contacting their own human proxies here within the population, creating almost like a really diverse sleeper army. That one day when the time comes, when aliens reveal themselves, or, you know, if there's some sort of a global collapse or something like that, that these people then can be activated and therefore steer human history during a time of great flux in whatever direction, you know, they're programmed to steer them in. Now the difference is, you know, you have both negative and positive alien groups doing this, okay? And both of them might have their contactees or abductees feeling like they have a mission to perform, like they're here to do something, but they just don't know exactly what it is. And that's because they have this knowledge and this programming stashed away in their subconscious or compartmentalized in a different part of their mind, you know, thoroughly secure and cached away so that it doesn't become available until the appropriate time. Because if it were to become activated now, I mean, you'd be acting out of line. You know, you can't have superpowers right now. You can't do all these things that would only be appropriate during that future scenario. Not to mention, you know, if you were to become activated in that stuff right now, you'd give away to the other alien groups what your programming is.
So that's why they ask, you know, when they, sometimes you take those "have you been abducted" surveys, and one of the questions is, "Do you feel that you're special or that you have a secret?" And that's probably where that comes from, is these beings giving you this information that you're not supposed to remember till the right time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of it. And the other part of it is also ego stroking by the negative alien factions. You know, they want to keep your allegiance by, you know, telling you any story that you want to hear. But, you know, they want to stroke your ego and get you to become so invested in them and in what they're telling you that, you know, you will obey anything that they tell you to do in the future. And unfortunately, there's so many of these types out right now, you know, that they're out there doing channelings, you know, going to conventions, posing as messengers of their associated alien group. And unfortunately, too many of them are lacking the discernment and the humility to put their ego aside and actually see through the deception that has been foisted upon them by their alien programmers, okay? So, you know, so just because you're an abductee and you feel like you have a mission and potentially that you're special, that doesn't mean you're a stooge of the negative types, but it also doesn't mean that you're some sort of a helper of the positive types. You really have to see your own case and take a look at what some of the deceptive elements could be and see if there's any holes in what you've been told.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have these sleeper cells that are supposed to come awake at the proper time. And then that would lead us to the topic of, you know, why aliens are not seen, or the alien activity, why the alien activity is not seen today, why they only walked open in ancient times.
Yeah. Well, see, in ancient times, like I said, yeah, they're walking openly amongst us partly because back then civilization was pretty primitive, so they can get away with it. You know, nowadays we actually have scientific instruments, you know, we've got inquiry, we've got rigorous thinking, or so we'd like to believe. So, you know, so we'd see through a lot of it if they attempted to do it nowadays. Well, actually, let me get into the reason why the negative aliens haven't revealed themselves, okay? And that's actually pretty important. The reason is because it's not because of a law of non-interference, like they want to protect us or anything like that. It's because they want us to become self-sufficient to a large degree, so that in the end we become almost like a self-running farm or like a self-running prison planet that, you know, through the hybrid breeding program, they can create an elite race that can run that, and therefore they themselves don't have to really do anything, okay? So, like, for instance, if, let's say, 1000 BC, the alien presence never went away, let's say that they remained as open, you know, as open gods, then the past 3,000 years of history, it would be nothing but humans becoming dependent on these gods for technology, for guidance, for everything. And, you know, basically we'd become a real pain in the butt to these aliens, not being able to take care of ourselves, not being able to be independent enough where they can just kind of sit back and skim off the profits off the top. Okay, so that's one reason why they've remained covert. They want civilization to develop on its own so that at the appointed time they can just step in, take things over, and therefore really don't have to expend any energy on their own in running this place. So that's one reason. The other reason, of course, is because anytime you have an overt rulership, you have an open target. And, you know, overt dictatorships, they never last long because eventually the people rise up and take them down. So they want to stay covert and manipulate things behind the scenes until at the point comes where human society is capable of entirely enslaving itself. And once everything is in lockdown, then they can finally step in, okay? So only recently have we had the technological infrastructure to enslave ourselves. I mean, not even 100 years ago did we have, let's say, satellites, you know, microchip implants, GPS tracking, all this kind of stuff. I mean, that only happened within the past several decades. So the closer we get to this global technological police state, the closer we get to the alien agenda fully manifesting, where they're finally able to step in and just kind of take the reins over this giant machine.
Yeah, definitely. Our technology is just getting light years ahead of what we can even handle. And there's just, you know, I can't even keep up with what they have nowadays. They have all these microchips in the phones, and, you know, now they're going to start making television sets with cameras in them. So you can call people through your television. Well, it's just more surveillance. It's more, you know, like you said, we're just enslaving ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, we're not too far away from it at all. You know, it doesn't take much. And actually, you know, there's a lot of black ops technology that cannot be used due to national security reasons. You know, they don't want to give away secrets to other countries. But what happens if you have, let's say, aliens reveal themselves and create a kind of like a global government kind of thing? Once you stop having nation states competing over technology and having secrets from each other, once you stop having that and you have this one unified world, then all of a sudden you can bring out all of these previously hidden black ops technologies and put them fully into the open, because there are no more secrets to protect anymore, at least no more technological secrets. And once they're in the open, then we really have to watch out, because that's when police state type stuff will really take off. I mean, phaser stun guns and mind reading stuff, and like Minority Report, you know, pre-crime things, stuff like that, that could really get out of hand. So that's one of the things we have to watch out for.
Yeah, and that takes us into the whole other subject of decreasing the population so that we're better able to be controlled if we're a smaller population. But then at the same time, if they decrease the population too much, then there won't be enough of us working for them to make money off of. So,
yeah, population control is definitely on their agenda because there's just too many for them to keep watch over at the moment. You know, I mean, you've got like the Georgia Guidestones, right, saying we should keep our population beneath 500 million. There's other sources saying, you know, no more than 2 billion. Some say no more than 1 billion. So that's still at least, like a 75% reduction in the human race. And that's not good news at all. But the way things are going now, it seems to be moving in that direction, unfortunately. So we've got to sit tight and try to make it through whatever's going to come.
Well, I guess that brings us to the final thoughts of the show, unless you wanted to elaborate on any other topic specifically.
Yeah, we're going to be doing some future shows here. So tonight's just like a general overview, and we're going to get more into detail in future shows. But yeah, definitely some final thoughts. You know, like I want to emphasize that the alien presence, it's pervasive. It's widespread. You know, it's deep into people's lives. And it's disguised. And only the very tip of that makes it into our, you know, daily conscious observations, you know, like, I remember I had an abduction 2 nights ago. Well, what happens during the other 99% of the time of your life? See, so that's one of the very important points that we have to realize that, you know, it's not strictly out there. It's not at arm's length. It's very close to home. That's one of the things I try to get across on my website. Also, you know, these aliens, they try to steer things. You know, they try to manipulate perceptions and beliefs. They try to steer even things that seem mundane, like, let's say, some sort of a post you might make on a forum pertaining to the alien agenda. They care about that. Not because you necessarily are some important person in history, but because it's like the butterfly effect. A little tiny thing can have a huge effect down the line, and they want to nip all little things in the bud before they become big problems down the line.
Oh, sure. Perfect example would be you could have a YouTube video. You can make a YouTube video, and you have all these great, wonderful comments, and the first negative, hateful comment you get seems to really just make all those other comments just obsolete. It's that one negative one that just ruined the rest of them.
Yeah, well, especially if that negative comment is highly, highly synchronous. You know, it's very, very pointed, and it says things that really no one can know, and it really hits you right at the right spot in order to shut you down. You know that it was aimed with greater precision than just any random troll can do, right? So that's one of the ways you can know. Also, you know, you got to watch out for certain people that seem to be highly programmed by negative alien types who try to persuade you to do one thing or another, who try to persuade you to believe a certain thing. You know, you really can't rely on anyone's word for anything. You have to research it for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. You know, talking about how, you know, the unseen forces that manipulate our thoughts and our actions, you know, the one thing that keeps coming back to my mind is like paranoia. I just think that paranoia is an alien invented emotion just to drive us crazy because, you know, if there's one thing that can really get to a person, it's paranoia.
Oh, yeah. Now tell me about it. Well, you know, paranoia, it's a psychological weapon, okay? You make a person paranoid enough and they collapse in upon themselves. They actually create the very thing that they fear through a strange metaphysical reality creation phenomenon. And certain aliens who are interdimensional, they attempt to induce paranoia little by little in their targets so that the targets start fearing these beings so much that it actually allows them to get even deeper into the target's lives. And so this creates like a runaway feedback loop where these beings start becoming more and more tangible due to being energized by the thought energies of their targets. And yeah, unfortunately, this thing typically tends to end in suicide or depression or, you know, some sort of a schizophrenic psychotic break or something like that.
Oh, absolutely. Psychological warfare is more powerful to a human being than probably physical pain. You get inside somebody's mind and you can make them do almost anything. You can make them feel almost any way and, you know, you can convince somebody they're being followed even when they're not being followed, and that's the power of suggestion. I don't remember that, I think it was Samuel L. Jackson movie, I can't remember the name of it, but where he had convinced a group full of ravers at a party that he had a pill called POS that was going to get you on the best high ever, and POS stood for power of suggestion, where it was a placebo, there was nothing in the pill, and yet everybody was convinced they were high. So, you know, you get those sort of cult-like scenarios going in society, you know, you put a piece of information in the media or disinformation or a YouTube video and my goodness, you know, you could just create a paranoia scenario or a false fear that does not exist very easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why our weapon is awareness, because they rely on ignorance to easily sway us, okay? They work by influence and persuasion more than force. So a lot of times they anything that they show to you openly, like, I don't know, like my case, pushing itself up against my door and rattling and scaring the crap out of me. A lot of that stuff, it's a bluff, you know. It's an attempt to induce fear and paranoia, which then causes the target to basically put a gun, like a psychological gun of fear, up to their heads and pull the trigger. That's what happens to them. They collapse in upon themselves, and they go into a self-destruct mode. And you know, that's why we have to be aware of the kind of tricks that they use. Which you know, as soon as you become aware of it, it loses its power, because now you know it's just a bluff, and you don't take it. And now you can then focus your attention onto the things that they do that you're not supposed to be aware of, you know, the little hidden manipulations where awareness really counts. So, you know, they use these bluff tactics as a distraction to get your attention over here, and in the meanwhile do invisible manipulations elsewhere. You know, so we all have to be just aware of the right areas and, you know, apply our efforts in those areas.
Absolutely. Or even just to, if they scare somebody enough, just to get them to abandon whatever task they were doing, whatever path they were on that they didn't want them on, you know, a simple scare tactic could get them to abandon all of their ambitions that, you know, they had previously. And then, you know, that one person that was going to write that book about their abductions, or that one person that was going to start a ufology group, you know, is now dissuaded from doing so. And then they've won. Their tactic worked.
Yep. But it only worked because the person was unaware and willing to give themselves over to it. So that's actually the good news. The good news is, if you just do a little research, you do the right research, you know, that's why I put my articles out there. If people go and read my articles and they think about them over, they apply some of the ideas in there, you can actually defeat a lot of these alien manipulations in your own life. I mean, even though you've got these seemingly superior hyperdimensional beings doing what they do, we actually have a lot of things on our sides. You know, we have positive forces. I didn't even get into the whole idea of divine intervention, you know, divine protection, which we do have if we ask for it and if we apply it. But things are actually in our favor if we merely apply our efforts in the right direction using the right awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we had a really good discussion tonight. I think it was a great first show, and a lot of information got put out there, but we definitely have a lot more to cover. So we will announce the next show date, which will probably be next weekend sometime around the same time, Friday or Saturday. So what would you like to finish up with as the last thing to say to our audience tonight?
Well, the last thing I can say is stay aware and keep a positive attitude, because if you combine your heart with your mind, you can get over anything.
Awesome. Well, Tom, I'm so happy that we were able to do the show tonight, and really want to thank everybody that was listening in, and I hope the chat went well. I wasn't there, so I don't know if any questions were asked or anything, but yeah, definitely. We will keep everybody posted about the next show, and it's all you, Tom. You go ahead and say goodbye to everybody.
Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back next time with lots more cool information, and we'll be getting a lot more in-depth in the future. So check back, and thanks for listening.